Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. The Human Factor, Gorbachev, Reagan, and Thatcher, and the end of the Cold War. In this penetrating analysis of the role of political leadership to the Cold War's ending, Archie Brown shows why the popular view that Western economic and military strength left the Soviet Union with no alternative but to admit defeat was wrong. Need to understand the significance of the parts played by Gorbachev, Reagan, and Thatcher in East-West relations in the second half of the 1980s. And Archie Brown addresses several specific questions. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from somewhere in the UK, author of The Human Factor, Archie Brown. Archie, good morning to you.
Morning, Giles. Morning.
Good to have you with us. It seems a lifetime ago, doesn't it? But the political landscape changed dramatically throughout Europe and the West in the mid 80s. What sort of brought around those the green shoots of those changes?
Well, the Cold War got colder in the early 1980s, and around about 1983, both Reagan in Washington and Margaret Thatcher and her government in Britain and others began to worry about the risk of nuclear war breaking out by accident or misperception. Reagan himself had contributed to this in 1983 when he launched his program of missile defense, the so-called SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, and described the Soviet Union as an evil empire, and this meant that the Cold War got even colder. But in the autumn of that year, there was a bit of a shift of policy in both Washington and London and elsewhere towards a desire to engage with the Soviet Union.
And that sort of desire to engage presumably had come from the change, if you like, of leadership style with the Soviet Union. We'd had Khrushchev, we'd had Brezhnev, we'd had briefly Andropov, and now we had a younger man, a man who seemed to be able to look to the West as somebody to do business with rather than an implacable foe to be fought.
Well, the shift in policy in the West took place before Gorbachev became leader. Andropov was leader in 1983, and then Chernenko. But these old men were able to do nothing to change things. Gorbachev was the key figure. When he became Soviet leader, Soviet policy gradually began to change, but it changed fundamentally, and this made possible things that were impossible before. The so-called new thinking in the Soviet Union really was new for the Soviet Union. And it was developed inside Russia and inside the Soviet Union as a whole. So now it might be tempting to think that Russians are all, you know, biologically authoritarian. But Gorbachev, in fact, was somebody who evolved into a real democrat.
And what was the reaction then of Thatcher? And because and correct me if I'm wrong, was it Margaret Thatcher who said to Reagan, "This is somebody we can do business with"?
Well, Margaret Thatcher said that to the media as well after she met Gorbachev for the first time in 1984, before he became Soviet leader. She got a flying start because she actually heard the name Gorbachev for the first time from me at a meeting in Chequers when she consulted various specialists in September 1983. We identified Gorbachev as somebody who was reform-minded and a likely future Soviet leader. And an invitation to Gorbachev to come to Britain followed in 1984. And he came in December that year, and he and Thatcher really, they argued a lot, but there was a lot of mutual respect. And she did say to Reagan that, you know, he was a very different Soviet leader from his predecessors.
Why did Gorbachev realize, was he as perceptive enough to realize that the Soviet Union, that sort of monolith that had been rumbling along since 1917, was coming to the end, if you like, of its sell-by date? And he must have had some pretty, you know, some forces who wanted to keep the Soviet Union as the Soviet Union, as that monolithic state. So, you know, quite an interesting one for him to be able to make reforms with Glasnost and Perestroika.
Well, Gorbachev did intend the fundamental transformation of the Soviet political system, and it did. You know, we got competitive elections, we got, you know, free speech, free publication. George Orwell's 1984 was published, books like that. So that he intended. He also intended to transform Soviet foreign policy, which he did. What he did not intend, what was an unintended consequence of his reforms, was the breakup of the Soviet Union. He hadn't realized that the extent to which that was going to be risked by democratizing to a large extent his country.
And then, of course, you had the places like Ukraine and Georgia, and you know, politicians who, you know, and the Ukraine particularly has had, you know, and again, I'm trying to remember, but Khrushchev, I believe, was Ukrainian, and we had various leaders who were saying, right, then if we're breaking up, then I'm going to lead my particular country. I'm trying to remember the name of the Georgian leader who had been the foreign minister of the Soviet Union, and you'll probably
Shevardnadze.
Thank you so much, Edward Shevardnadze. Yes. What was the reason? Why did you say that the time was right to have a study of this particular point? Because it marks, it is, if you like, the starting block to where we are today, and especially at the moment. But could you? I mean, people might argue that Putin is trying to drag the Russia back into the old Soviet Union.
Well, you know, I would argue that a great opportunity was missed at the end of the Cold War, that there were relations of trust, you know, latterly between Reagan and Gorbachev, between George Bush and Gorbachev. In 1990-91, things were getting more and more difficult for Gorbachev in Moscow, but his relations with the Western leaders were excellent, with European leaders, with pretty well the whole Western world. But then Gorbachev was overthrown, and Yeltsin came in. Yeltsin also had good relations with Western leaders, first of all with George in America, with George Bush, then with Bill Clinton. And you could just say that, why NATO then? Because NATO was formed in order to combat Soviet expansionism. And in 1992, there was no international communist movement. There was no communist country, no communist-ruled country in Europe. There was no Soviet Union. So why could we not design new security arrangements that would embrace Russia? Well, it wasn't so bad NATO continuing, but from a Russian point of view, what was really worrying was NATO expansion. So this, after all, was seen in Russia as a hostile military alliance, and it expanded to the borders of Russia.
I just want to go back to another point as well about, because we talk about the relationship between Thatcher and Gorbachev, a man that she could do business with. And we know the relationship between Reagan and Thatcher was particularly good, perhaps the best it had been. How did Thatcher convince Reagan? And then how did Reagan convince the hawks at Washington, the Weinbergers, et cetera, that, you know, this wasn't another cunning plan by the Reds under the bed? Because, you know, there is, you know, I remember that, you know, that there were the protests against the cruise missiles being stationed, for example, at Greenham, et cetera. And mutually assured destruction seemed to be, you know, hanging over us at all times. So, you know, you had the hawks in Reagan's Washington saying that, you know, the Weinbergers saying this is not going to happen. How did he convince his team, as it were?
Yeah, well, Margaret Thatcher had a bigger role than one would expect for a British prime minister at that time. And the reason was, you know, her excellent relationship with Reagan. They saw each other as ideological soulmates. And they were both hardliners, and she was respected in Washington as a hardliner, even by the people in the Defense Department. And so there was, as you touched on, you know, a real argument within the Reagan administration, big differences of opinion between the Defense Department under Weinberger and the State Department under George Shultz. And the fact that Thatcher came down on the same side as Schultz in favour of engaging with the Soviet Union, in favour of accepting that Gorbachev was a different kind of Soviet leader, and it was possible to reach good agreements with him, that helped to swing the American decision in that direction. And so Reagan himself was persuaded that he really should engage with the Soviet leader. Reagan's policy was peace through strength, but until Gorbachev came along, the Russians believed that Reagan just used peace to win elections. What he was really interested in was only military buildup. But actually, both parts of the peace through strength Reagan believed in. And Thatcher helped to persuade Gorbachev that Reagan was serious about peace as well. So she was a kind of intermediary between Gorbachev and Reagan, and played a bigger role than a British prime minister at that time in the 20th century could be expected to play.
And indeed, and also because we have, the speed at which the change swept through the former Soviet Union, the Baltic states, the Velvet Revolution, etc. This is all a catalyst of Gorbachev's policies. And also we have, if you like, an EU that's expanding under Jacques Delors. Spain and where I'm sitting now, Portugal had come in to become full members of the EU in the early 80s. So perhaps whilst today an American president might speak to Europe, at that point, if you like, the EU wasn't really as much a force as Thatcher was with the direct line to Reagan, you could argue?
So I didn't get the question there, Charles.
Do you think that perhaps that Thatcher had a better link to Reagan because Europe, if you like, the EU and the changes, the tumultuous changes that were going on through Europe, perhaps there wasn't, if, for example, now a president would go to the EU to deal with as we've seen with the situation in Russia, whereas at that time, because the EU wasn't perhaps so much like an entity as it is today, and Britain was still obviously part and a leading member of the EU, then that meant that Thatcher had more input, if you like, and Reagan was prepared to talk to a Thatcher than he would with a Mitterrand, for example.
Yeah, the EU today has more of a foreign policy than it had then, and so the Americans like to deal with individual leaders of the major European countries. And so Thatcher and Reagan had this very, very strong relationship. But when George Bush succeeded Reagan in 1989, the German issue became top of the political agenda, the possibility of German unification and the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 made it pretty clear that German unification was going to become a huge political issue, both for Russians, Americans, everybody. So at that point, the most important person in Europe for the Americans to speak to was Helmut Kohl, the German chancellor. And Bush was much closer to Kohl than he was to Thatcher. I mean, he said himself in his diaries, which have not been published yet, that though he respected Thatcher, he felt much closer to the German leader, Helmut Kohl.
And you might argue that as a former head of the CIA as well, then Bush Sr. Had perhaps more experience, sort of hands-on experience with dealing with Europe than perhaps Reagan had, who had been previous to becoming, I think, had been governor of California, had always been, if you like, an American politician based in America, an American leader with the American background, whereas Bush had that Europe idea because of his work, because of the CIA.
Yeah, Bush had a lot of experience and he knew quite a bit about foreign policy. He was also very cautious. And when he succeeded Reagan in January 1985, then for the first half year, there was really no progress in the in relations with the Soviet Union. So he lost a lot of time there. But eventually he caught on. Sorry, I meant to say in 1989. He became president in January 1989.
Just, it seems, and this is one of the things of history, but it seems that we look back at previous decades as they recede into time. We look on them with nostalgic rose-colored spectacles, if you like. But it's easy to forget how close we came to the Cold War becoming hot in the early 80s. I mean, there was a real fear. How vital do you think the roles of each of these three disparate personalities played in the fact that, you know, we are having this conversation at the moment?
Well, I think that, you know, reducing tension, you can't reduce tension at this moment we're in now because the tension's there as a result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But reducing tension is important because in times of very high tension, miscalculation, a misperception, human error, computer malfunction, you could trigger nuclear war. And there were several times where we came very close to it, that a Russian colonel, Petrov, he saw on his computer what looked like an incoming missiles from the United States. And he had a very short time to decide whether this was for real, in which case they had about 20 minutes to launch their own nuclear missiles, or could this be something wrong with the computer? And he decided that it was a computer malfunction and we averted war. And then there was another occasion when an American had to take the same decision. And it turned out that a training disc had been put in the computer showing a nuclear attack. It was a training disc, and yet a training disc. And so it suggested to him this was a real nuclear attack from the Soviet Union. So, you know, these individuals had to take life-saving decisions, not just for themselves, but for the planet.
Indeed, there are, you know, flocks of geese, etc., appearing as missiles. Also, we remember all that. And here we are, Archie, here we are with the situation that we're seeing in Central Europe at the moment, with the situation in Ukraine, with what looks like, some would say, a desire to return to the monolithic days of the Soviet Union. Do you think that, obviously, two of the three are no longer with us? Gorbachev, presumably retired in Odessa somewhere since the death of his beloved wife. What would you be your thoughts, just briefly, at the situation that Russia finds itself in now, that seems to be facing international condemnation and blockades that we haven't seen since those dark days of the Cold War?
Yeah, the first thing to say is it shouldn't have come to this, and it doesn't excuse for a moment what Putin has done. You know, Russia has been isolated. Lots of agreements were made between Reagan and Gorbachev, Bush and Gorbachev, were unilaterally ended by the Americans. And there was NATO expansion did make the Russian military security people very, very nervous, very they felt humiliated and so forth. So that's the background. It doesn't excuse for a moment this appalling invasion of Ukraine, because NATO, even though the Russians regarded it as a hostile military alliance, it was not going to attack Russia unless a NATO country was attacked. And so there's no excuse whatsoever for the Russian invasion. But now it's happened. I think Putin and people around him, especially people around him and Russians, are going to realize it was a terrible mistake from their point of view also, because the reaction has been much greater than they expected. First of all, the Ukrainian resistance is much stronger than they bargained for, and the Western response, the response of most of the rest of the world, has been united against Russia in a way in which it wasn't united to the same extent when the Soviet Union invaded Hungary in 1956 or Czechoslovakia in 1968. It's much more united this time. And because Russia is so much more integrated in the global economy than the old Soviet Union was, the economic sanctions bite really hard. And so every social group in Russia is going to be worse off as a result of this. And they're really feeling the pinch.
What do you hope that people will take from your book, The Human Factor, Gorbachev, Reagan, and Thatcher, and the End of the Cold War? Hello, Archie, can you hear me?
Yes, was that a question?
Yeah, what do you hope that people will take from your book? What do you hope that, is it to shine a light on this particular fascinating period of politics and personalities? What do you hope that people learn from your book, The Human Factor?
I would say one thing that should come out of my book is the importance of engagement. I mean, now is not the time to engage with Putin because, you know, he's waging a really brutal war. But the time must come when we re-engage, and because otherwise we're going to go back to the days of the early 1980s when nuclear war could break out at any moment as a result of misperception. And so this time will come, but now is not the moment. At the moment, we've got to counteract Putin's measures, not by getting NATO countries in direct military conflict with Russia, because that would be suicidal, but it would be, you know, both sides. For both sides, it would be absolutely intolerable, impossible. But the kind of things that are being done, the economic measures are very, very important, and they are going to make Russia worse off. Actually, all of us are going to pay a price in higher energy costs and so on. But the price the Russians are paying, nothing like the price that Ukrainians are paying, but it will be enough to make them realize that Putin made a dreadful, dreadful mistake.
The book is called The Human Factor, Gorbachev, Reagan and Thatcher and the End of the Cold War. It's by Archie Brown, who will be speaking to you today. Archie, it's been a pleasure to have you on this morning's show. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.